You're having a tough spell in life. Usually what you would be thinking about is the stuff that happens to you, the bad stuff. You know, the pressures, someone's hurt your feelings, or you know, whatever it may be. And you're just, things aren't going well for you. Things aren't coming to you easily. And I think for the most part, that's the way most of us would look at it. That if I'm having a tough spell, that's what's going on. It just could be bad, but I just can't catch a break. With David, what we're talking about is a tough spell where he did a lot of things wrong. And it was very noticeable in the Samuel account that he did a lot of things wrong. You know, David is kind of presented to us as the gold standard of the king. And he was in one particular way, and that was that he prevented idols from being worshipped during his reign. He had the same problems that you have or that I have, and some even worse. And he goes through this particular spell right now. And you might excuse it, or maybe even David might have excused it. He had been given the notice, if you will, that he was going to be the king. And as a result of that, you know, Saul finds out about that, the king who had been reigning. And he wants to get rid of David. And so David's now running. And so a lot of things are happening to him that, you know, makes it so he can't live what he would consider to be a normal life. And I think that's the same for you. You know, if you're under pressure of people chasing you all over the area, you'd find reasons for trying to understand what's going on. And then if you did something that was out of character, I'll say that, not that necessarily saying that he wasn't inclined sometimes to do things wrong. Well, there are things that would cause you to do the sorts of things that could be really, really detrimental. But to take responsibility for it, going back to my point, that's another thing altogether, because it's very easy in certain circumstances to excuse our behavior. And so we have a tough spell. And I think that's what you're gonna find here. There's three particular examples that are found there in point number one, two, and three in the outline. From 1 Samuel chapter 21 through about chapter 24 or so, we read these events in the life of David. And it's where he doesn't shine very well at all. The first is with a priest named Ahimelech. You'll notice here that it says, David came to Nob or Nob to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech to meet David and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" Now, I want you to understand here that Ahimelech is the priest, and he doesn't really know what's going on. I mean, he thinks, you know, David ought to be accompanied by somebody. I mean, considering who he was about to be, I assume because he was priest, he might have had at least a hint in his own mind that was what was going to happen. And so he says, "Why?" David says to Ahimelech, the priest, "Well, the king has commissioned me with a matter and has said to me, let me tell you thing about the matter on which I am sending you and with which I have commissioned you, and I have directed the young men to a certain place. Now, therefore, what do you have on hand?" And then he says, "Please give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever can be found." Now, understanding what happens here, this is, he's not telling Ahimelech the truth. He makes it sound like he's on some sort of mission. You know, the king sent him on a mission. He's on a secret mission of some sort. And I can't really talk about it all that much. I think it's implied there in the text. And he says, "Yeah, I have people with me, but they're not here with me right now." But he just tells him an untruth. Now think about this and try to understand how you would rationalize it and how you might rationalize it as well. And that is, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but under these circumstances, you know, I just know God's going to understand. I think God understands that you and I are inclined toward trying to worm ourselves out, you know, away and out of difficult situations. And it's very easy to do it by not telling the truth. So I think it surprises God that David did what he did. But here's a guy who, again, who's under And think how often you will present that in your own mind as a reason or a logical excuse for why you might do something wrong. Well, you know, I just had to in that situation. And sitting here and I'm reading this, it's very easy for me to draw the conclusion that David was really not very strong and he just showed how weak he was. But the understanding of it's in the Bible, they're presented to us in such a way to where you can tell God's not hiding people and their weaknesses. And so we find out about who these people are, and we find out about David. And of course, what it represents to us is the thought that here's this guy who is having a dream as a king, predominantly because of the idolatry issue. And we all know how things started out with David and Bathsheba, so things didn't start out well as far as character is concerned in that situation, to say the least. He's in a situation where you could probably excuse what he's doing, or at least in his own mind. I mean, he didn't do it. And the question arises, you know, we need some food, and the priest says, well, you know, we've got this special food, the consecrated bread that they would use as a part of the worship in the temple. And, of course, in this case, it's still the tabernacle. Priest says, well, look, I could give you some of this or let you use it, but I just need to make sure that all these men that you're hanging out with, all those individuals are individuals that have been sanctified. You know, they've been clean. They didn't do anything with women that was incorrect or whatever it may be. And so that's a sure. I don't know that that's, I certainly wouldn't give him the benefit of the doubt on that. I mean, why would you look at that and say, well, maybe he was really right. This one, and the men really were pure. I mean, they are kind of isolated. Look, the whole thing is a lie. He goes along with it when Ahimelech is putting himself into the situation. So it says, surely women have been killed previously when I said, and the vessels of the young men were holy. But it was an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy? In other words, you know, these circumstances, these guys couldn't be any more holy. So the priest gave him the consecrated bread. For there was no bread there, but the bread of the presence of God, which was in order to put hot bread in its place, and when it was actually taken away. So anyway, he goes and he gives them some bread. This is discussed over in Matthew chapter 12, where there was discussion about what things you could do on the Sabbath. Could you do a miracle on the Sabbath? Or could you do something good to someone on the Sabbath? And Jesus uses this as an example. He says, well, under these circumstances, it was okay for him to do that. Now, Jesus knows in this text, and again, I would invite you to go read that on your own, because it opens up a lot of things I just don't have time to discuss this morning. But Jesus never says, and, you know, under the circumstances, it was okay for him to lie. Doesn't do that. Doesn't condone the circumstances. But he does say the actual offering of help by the priest to David was an okay thing, even though under most circumstances it wouldn't be. Just like in the case of doing good things on the Sabbath, there were certain things you weren't allowed to do, but if someone was in need, you're allowed to help them out. So here's a situation where you're thinking, I'm sort of disappointed in this guy. Now, when you go through and you read about the life of David, I want you to know, at least this is kind of an anecdotal way that I look at this, and that is, if it were for Psalms, I don't know that I find David being at really very much peace at all with himself ever. I mean, this guy is really, once he becomes king, or is noted as being, denoted as being king, he's on the run, he's fearful of his life, and he's just doing all kinds of different things to try to keep himself alive. Well, okay, I want you to understand that some of you might allow yourself to go this direction. Well, he was supposed to be king, and this is the way, you know, God wanting to be protected. And so God understands these circumstances. Now really, I want you to think about this because I know how this works for me and I assume it works for you very much the same way. It's very easy to convince yourself, under these circumstances, I think it's going to be okay. But can you honestly say that? I mean, because I'm going to tell you something that happens here is that it's not just David we look at and we say, look what he's done wrong. What he does here, because poor Ahimelech has no idea what's going on. And it ends up costing him his life because of the lie that David told. And that kind of changes the whole thing, doesn't it? At least it does for me in terms of the impact that this was going to have because it was rather substantial. That many people, this issue that happened here as relates to Ahimelech. And it didn't lie to him and poor Ahimelech is just caught up in it and he goes along with it because he doesn't think there's anything wrong. He certainly doesn't think that he's protecting a traitor to Saul. That's clear in the text. And as a result of it, that thing where it almost kind of excuses him for doing that ends up costing a bunch of people their lives. So think about that when you're getting in kind of a bad spell and you're convincing yourself that maybe there are certain things I do that are okay. But it's not. It's a lie. Well, he tells another lie to Ahimelech. He says, now, is there not a spear or a sword on hand? For I brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me because of the king's matter being so urgent. So what he had in, some sort of a tool, an article of defense. I don't know if he did. I suspect he probably did. But what was the lie was he says he's still saying this whole thing about a secret mission here for the king. So he says, then the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, behold, it is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Now, probably most of us don't remember this from the story, that after he used it to kill Goliath, that the priest took it and protected it. But anyway, that's what happened. He says, if you would take it for yourself, take it. For there is no other except it here. So you want, I mean, after all, it was his sword. He used it to kill Goliath. I mean, why would you deny that to him? And after all, this guy is a very, very significant, special human being. David said, well, give it to me. Another lie. Now, I'm not trying to be hard on this guy, but what I am trying to help me and you to understand is that when I do things that I shouldn't do or when I lie, the idea that I'm the only one who's going to be hurt by it, you need to be very, very careful about that being the case because that's what I learned from this. And as I already told you about it, that's exactly what happened. That when Saul found out that Ahimelech had taken in David, Saul was very, very upset about it. He hears it from somebody who actually sees Ahimelech interacting with David, tattles on him, and it ends up costing him and a bunch of other priests their lives. Or anybody who had anything to do with it. So this thing had an incredible impact on people. Now, you know, I'm not suggesting that this is something I would never do. I mean, because there is a passage that I have here. Let me just flip over it real quick. And that is, you know, you look at this and you say, well, the easy thing for him to do, why did he just confess that he did it wrong? That he did something wrong and be done with it. That's what it says in 1 John 1:9. And I would agree that it's the right thing to do. But it's not usually the easiest thing to do. You know, life is a major battle. And sometimes we give the impression to people that, well, if that's what God says, that's what I'm going to do. And it's, you know, without question that that's what's going to happen to me and how I'm going to do what I'm going to do because God said that I'm going to do it. It's the thing. But it's not always the easiest. In fact, oftentimes it isn't. If we can, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. Sounds real simple, doesn't it? I'll just confess that I'm wrong. Now, here's the sort of thing that makes these things different. Most of you who pray to God, you ask forgiveness for a lot of things. But most of the things you ask forgiveness for, nobody else knows about it. And it's just between you and God. And most of us don't like the idea of other people finding out about, you know, my bad spell that I'm having. I think we're all pretty much that way. We okay with God knowing because we can't hide from him anyway. Really got my reputation with people or whatever, it's going to make this person mad, that person mad. And so it becomes really, really challenging. I mean, I can see where he would rationalize this. You know, I have to lie about this thing because I'm being run down by individuals who want to take my life. And, you know, I've already been picked to be the future king. And what are you going to do under circumstances like this? Let me go back to this situation here. If it hadn't been started by such a mess with Ahimelech, this is almost kind of humorous. And you just read that story by itself, this one coming up, you'd think it's pretty funny. He gets to a king named Achish, who is the king of Gath. Verse 11. But the servants of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one? And of this one they had danced, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Now, if you go follow along in the text here, these guys are saying, you sure you want to mess with him? I mean, really, you know, this is the guy who defeated the Philistines. Now, Gath was a Philistine city, so you, obviously you would understand that he would probably be likely considered an enemy by Achish. So, David makes a decision here. David took these words to heart. He hears what's been said and greatly feared Achish, the king of Gath. He was afraid now. And what the people were telling Achish is, you need to be aware what's going on here, because this could be really, really dangerous for you to get in connection with this guy. And you can get it from a lot of different angles. Not just potentially people of Israel, but also your brother Philistines. So he disguised his sanity. This is it. Let me go back to verse 12. David took these words to heart and greatly feared Achish, the king of Gath. So he disguised his sanity before them. Now, this guy is the king. That's what's being told. Now, what's he going to expect? He's going to expect this guy to act like a king. So, David's pretty smart here. I mean, he can't run here. So it says, he disguised his sanity before them. He acted insanely in their hands and scribbled on the door of the gate and let his saliva run down into his beard. See, that sounds, you know, almost crazy. It is crazy. Because that's why he's going to act. Case, I can't be the king. So the reaction that Achish gives him. Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see this man behaving as a madman. Why do you bring him to me? You're going to try to tell me that this is David the king? I'm just not impressed at all." He says, "Why do you bring him?" Verse 10. "Do I lack madmen? Do I just, you know, not have enough crazy people around me as it is?" I thought that was pretty funny. "This one to the madmen in my presence, shall this one come into my house?" In other words, this can't be what you say it is. He can't be who you're actually thinking that he is. And so here, again, maybe not the kind of lie that he told to Ahimelech, and maybe not the sort of long-range effect that you would expect maybe coming out of this. It's not going to happen in this particular case, as far as I can tell. But he faked and lied about who he was without saying it. David's having a pretty bad spell here. And you can understand it. And I don't want us at all, as you've heard me say many times over the years, to get all up in the air, self-righteous, looking down on these individuals. We're just calling this like it is. And if you've got the courage to see yourself in David's life, then maybe to think about the impact of some of the things that you do. I mean, again, I want to go to this point one more time. Yes, God is holy, but God knows everything about who I am. And so, again, when I confess to Him, He already knows it. And in this day and age, God seemed to be putting voices in people's heads so they could know about my life or your life. No evidence that that's going on, as presented in the Word of God. But what are we going to do if the thing is going to maybe really, really hurt our reputation? And see, and that's where we get into the, well, it's not going to really hurt, is it, all that much? I want you to think about that. When we get into particular places in our life when it's very easy for us to just do the sorts of things that are not at all right in the eyes of God, and just in ways rationalize it. I know for a fact it would be so easy for David to do that. Well, there gets to be another chapter in this whole event, and that's called Life in a Cave. And we're going to get over to Psalm 142. In the beginning of Psalm 142, it talks about this particular psalm describing what it was like or what he was going through in his mind during this tough time. And as far as we know, it is an accurate description. It's something that was added later as describing it, but most people agree that it's probably describing what it was like when he was in the cave. Nevertheless, the principles work. So David departed from there, you know, his little stint as a crazy guy, and he gets to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and all his father's household heard of it, they went down there to him. Everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him. And he became captain over them, and now there were about 400 men with him. Now you can look at this and say, you know, this is that magnetism of David here, as a leader, and how people looked up to him. And so you can look at these individuals and you can think, you know, he can only attract his family and most people who are afraid of the government one way or another. So that doesn't sound so good, I mean, when you're looking at that. But they were looking to him. He became the captain. Well, he goes to Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother come and stay with you until I know what God will do for me. Then let them with the king of Moab," and they stayed with him all that time that David was in the stronghold. The prophet said to David, "Do not stay in the stronghold, depart and go into the land of Judah." David departed and went into the forest of Herod. So if you look at the map, you would see these particular cities, Gath and Adullam, are all toward the ocean from Jerusalem, and of course that was where the Philistines lived. So you know, what you need to do is you really need to get out of there. So he was living in this cave, and then what we read in Psalm 142 is the description of what it was like for him to be in this cave. And this is where David becomes the David you know, and I know, and that we respect. And as I said, you know, if it weren't David wouldn't look all that good most of his life. I mean, the family life, it was really, really treacherous. I mean, he had a son who wanted to kill him. And there's all kinds of things that are going on there that none of you would want to have as a part of your existence. But this is what David was able to do that makes him very, very special. And that is, how did he work his way through those situations? So here it is, Psalm 142. Based on what he was experiencing in his own mind, and that's what I'm talking about here, his own mind, he's thinking about things that are going on here. And this is happening while he's in the cave. He says, "I lift up my voice to the Lord, and I make supplication with my voice to the Lord. I complain before him. I declare my trouble before him. When my spirit was one within me, you knew my path. In the way I walked, they had hidden a trap for me. Look to the right and see, for there is no one who regards me. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul. Now notice what I have there in point number four. He's experiencing a lot of what a lot of us feel at times. You know, he really wants God in his life. And then start the thing off. You know, I point there that it's a place in life where he feels very, very overwhelmed. He says, I'm overwhelmed with my circumstances. It's understandable. But of course, he doesn't really talk about what he did that was wrong. But we're not going to bother him for that at this particular time. What we're looking at is, what do you do when things just seem to be so beyond your ability to cope with those things? Now, he not only is overwhelmed, there's this sense in which people are trying to get him, which was really true, but he says they have hidden a trap for me. So there's a little bit of paranoia that also steps in, you know. You just kind of feel like everybody is against you. And that's a card that we easily pull. The reason why is because I can't trust anybody. When probably most of what you're thinking is what's going on, you know, in your head and this own little world of you that feels persecuted. And David certainly felt that. But it was very legitimate when you consider that, you know, there were people out to get him, and that was really true with him. But what was the answer to it? He felt deserted. He felt like there's just no one on my side. Nobody cares about me. No one cares for my soul. He was really, really frustrated. And you can see by looking over in verse 6, he cries out to God, give heed to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are too strong for me. Now the thing you noticed here about this and how it all develops, and again, he's having his thoughtful moments. You know, he's not in a situation here where he has to weasel his way out of something that's going on that, you know, he gets himself into that he probably shouldn't have. But he was just looking for the easier way out. But this, as he's given time to think about this when he's in the cave, notice the things that we notice about how he connects with God. Number one, he does at this point in time determine, okay, I've got to take this to God. I cried out to you, O Lord, and I said, you are my refuge. Boy, wouldn't we need a taste of that instead of never finding time for the Lord. Never really even considering him when you're going through a time. I mean, he needed to know that he needed to be close to God. You and I would all agree with that. But I doubt he was thinking about that when he was telling those lies. I doubt he was thinking about that when he was faking being crazy. Because he was all into his self-defense. But now as he gets some time to think about it, he's thinking, God, I really need you in my life. And so he verbalizes it. And he pleads to God that, you know I need my help. Heed my cry. I brought very low. That people are just too strong for me. Verse 7, bring my soul out of prison so that I may give thanks to your name. The righteous will surround me, for you will deal bountifully with me. When things are going bad for you, it's just very easy to feel alone. It's also, I think it's just so convenient. You know, if we have a few people around us that we can blame for what's going on, would you please leave me alone? You know, life is hard enough as it is. You know, cut me a break. All the things that we really think we deserve in life. But it doesn't negate the responsibility of doing the right thing. And then realizing at some point, and as I said, David biographically doesn't look so good most of the time. But what a blessing for him to be able to share what he feels in his heart about God. And he does confess his sin in other passages. There's another chapter which is also dedicated to what was going on in his head when he was in that cave. But notice, he was this guy who realized finally, I got to get to God on this. I got to share this with him. I got to say it. This is what we call prayer. That's why we do it. So we verbalize it. It takes it to a level of clarity that we really need. Notice here the situation I described earlier about why some of these things were heavy on his heart. The king said to summon Ahimelech, the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's household, the priests who were not in Nob, and all of them came to the king. And this is where the whole thing starts to collapse. And it's possible David might have heard about this. Said, listen now, son of Ahitub. And he answered, well, here I am, Lord. He has no idea what's going on. Saul said to him, why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me in that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him so that he would rise against me by lying in ambush as it is to this day? Now, if you go ahead and read ahead what happens, it's very gory what happens. This was a guy, I really believe, who believed that Saul would have been very, very pleased with what he was doing if he had this kind of innocent view that Saul's still king, even though David's out there roaming around, how much they all understood about it. He seemed fairly ignorant. When that incident arose, David lied about being on this mission from Saul. But nevertheless, he says, well, what have you done? And then he goes on and says, well, I helped them. And then that was it. A brutal thing happens. And there's the point that I wanted to make to start with. And that is that things that we do can sometimes have very great repercussions to other people. We need to keep that in mind whenever we are tempted to fib or lie our way out of situations. None of us want what happens to Ahimelech and the priest around him. And his family. None of us would even dream of wanting that to happen. We never would even our deepest thoughts about what's right and what's wrong, whatever, would have wanted that to happen. And I don't think David probably was after that as well. I think that David was just trying to get himself out of a situation. And he, whatever worked for now, that's all that matters. I'll deal with what happens after that. This is a tough time. This is a tough spell for David. And he shows us how to get through it. He tells us through what his example is that we need to verbalize these things with God. We need to see how God can work in our lives. He says, I know God knows me and he knows what's going on. He doesn't say, and I'm going to make this, and this happen because that's what God does. He doesn't do that and he doesn't say that. And sometimes that's what we think. When we talk about God knowing our path, he's just saying, God, you know where I've been and you know where I'm going. That's what you know, God. And I made some bad choices along the way. He realized and visualized the future with God. And that was kind of remotely there with him when he was just trying to get out of those situations. So read a little bit more about Doeg, who's the one who told on Ahimelech, then I think you'll see how disastrous this whole thing was. And it all started when he stopped walking with God. And look at the damage that happened. Sometimes nothing really comes as a result of it, right? Sometimes you stretch the truth or whatever it is you're doing and kind of get you through the situation. Nobody's hurt. But that's not the way to go through life. That's that whole thing about, well, just tell me what I can get away with and get to heaven. David really forgot about all those things related to his relationship with God until he was able to get into that cave, it seems, and really think about what's going on here and what I'm doing. I mean, yeah, there are things that are happening to me because of other people, but what am I bringing on myself? Well, here's what I think is worthwhile considering as we bring it to a close. And that is, we have a certain attitude that I think will always work. And as David says in Psalm 19:12, who can discern his errors? Acquit me of my hidden faults. I mean, here's a guy who understands that there are things I do that I could not understand being the one who's doing it. And so he's so humble before God. You know, he says, God, I just want you to forgive me of those things. Things I just don't know. He says, keep your servant from presumptuous sins and let him rule over me. Then I will be blameless and I shall be acquitted of great transgression. This is exactly what happened here with David. He just let the whole set of circumstances rule over him. And I pity him for that. And the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. So that's, I think, the way, as I note there, you know, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to try to bring myself to have a relationship with God where I have the courage to be honest with the people around me as well as to God, who does know just what a fluke I can be sometimes. He knows that. And so he says, really here, here's the best way to get through life. Let my meditation be acceptable to you. And of course, be humble about who I am. And I'll trust you, God, as my rock and my redeemer. Psalm 142 has always been very powerful, particularly when you and I see this in the context of the events where he actually brings himself out and is upfront with God and honest with God and realizing that's the way I got to move forward. Yeah, you and I have bad spells in life. Most of them we bring it on yourself. And that's exactly true here in his case. Again, he's really under a lot of pressure and I can really be sympathetic with that. But he in no way, as he gets back and he thinks about this, tries to justify it. He knows what he did. He's determined now to go forward. And know that as he continues to confess his sins, that God's going to forgive him, like it says in Psalm, the 51st chapter. So, you and I all have had tough times. We're going to have them. We're going to have these spells, you know, where things keep coming at us and it seems to be hard to get into a situation where I can actually now say, okay, I can tell the truth now. I can be the person God wants me to be. I got nothing in my way. The problem is most life doesn't work that way. This stuff generally all kind of sneaks up on us. And the next thing you know, we're disrespecting God and hurting other people in the process. What a beautiful thing that we have, though, in a God who promises that he's going to forgive us of our sins. And again, that's what makes David such a great example. We sometimes try to figure out what it means to be a man after God's own heart. And one of the reasons why we are able to do that is because we really see this guy's heart pretty well, the way he writes in Psalms. But what you see in him is that he is a humble individual. And when it comes time, he can really get himself and his head connected with who God is in his life, and that's what he wants. And so right now, if you're not a child of God, you're in a place where you need God. You need what God's blessings have to offer. That is the forgiveness of sins through what Jesus did for you. And to respond to that with a desire to be obedient to the Lord. And to be a blessing to the God who created you and then let your life be the kind of life that's going to know what to do when you allow yourself to get sucked into these bad spells, and all of us understand how that works. But you still have a way out of it. There's forgiveness from a God who could forgive David. And of course, you know that if he can forgive him of what you and I would call atrocities, you know, there are a lot of things that I do that aren't atrocities, but they are still as offensive to God as the thing that David actually did. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, then act upon it. Be baptized into Christ, saying, this is the only way. It's through his blood that I will be cleansed, not lying my way out of situations like David did. If we can assist, please come as we stand and sing. Richard.